A River Rock fireplace, a bathtub big enough for two, and a magical view of the moonlit coast. Ange? Slowly, she turned around to face him. How can I tell him? She thought. Come here. She was helpless to resist the sound of his voice. She moved toward him. He pulled her into his arms, held her so tightly she felt dizzy. She had to tell him. Now. If they were to have any kind of future, she had to tell him. Conlan, he kissed her then, so gently. When he drew back, he looked down at her. She felt as if she were drowning in the blue of his eyes. I couldn't believe you gave the baby stuff away. I'm so proud of you, Ange. I look at you now, and I can breathe again. I don't think I realized until yesterday how long I'd been holding it all inside. Oh, Con. We need... Very slowly, he dropped to one knee. Smiling, he held out her wedding ring. I figured out what to do with it. Marry me again. The way Angie dropped to her knees was more like folding. I love you, okay? Don't forget it. As Papa used to say, I love you more than all the drops of rain that fall. He frowned. I expected a simple yes, then a rush to the bed. My yes couldn't be any simpler. But I need to tell you something first. You might change your mind. About wanting to marry you? Yeah. He looked at her for a long time, a slight frown creasing his brow. Okay. Hit me. She drew in a deep breath. Yesterday, when I called you about the nursery, I was so excited. I couldn't wait to get home and tell Lauren. She stood up and moved away from him. She went to the window, looked out at the crashing surf. When I got home, she'd been crying, and David was there. Conlan stood up. She heard the creaking of the old floorboards. He probably wanted to come stand behind her, but he didn't move. She went on. She got a full ride to USC, her dream school. And? It changed everything, she said softly, echoing Lauren's exact words. Maybe if she had a toddler, she could swing it. But a two-month-old? There's no way she could handle USC, working and raising a newborn, all before she turns 18. It was a long time before Conlan spoke. When he did, his voice was ragged, not his voice at all. And? Angie squeezed her eyes shut. She wants to give the baby up for adoption. She thinks it will be the best thing for the baby. It probably will. She's so young. He came up behind Angie, but didn't touch her. She said, Take my baby. Just like that. She sighed, felt him stiffen. It was like being in a car wreck. That's how hard and fast it hit me. You said yes. She heard the dullness in his voice. She turned to face him, thankful at least that he hadn't pulled away. What choice did I have? I love Lauren. Maybe I never should have let her into my heart. No, I won't say that. I'm glad I did. She's how I came back to myself. And to you. She put her arms around his neck, held him close so that he had to look at her. What if Sophia had asked this of us? She's not Sophia, he said, and she saw how much it hurt him to say that. She's somebody's, Sophia. She's a scared 17-year-old who needs someone to love her, to take care of her. How can I say no to her? Do I tell her to give her baby to strangers when I'm right here? When we're right here? Damn you, Angie. He pushed past her, went into the other room. She knew she shouldn't go to him, should give him time, but the thought of losing him again made her desperate. How can we say no to this? She crossed the room, came up beside him. You could be his little league coach. Don't. His voice was barely recognizable. How can we say no? She said again, softer this time, forcing him to face her. As she asked the question, she couldn't help thinking about the day she'd gone to his workplace when Diane had said, "Twice I came into the office and found him crying." He ran a hand through his hair and sighed. "I don't think I can go through this again. I'm sorry." She closed her eyes. Those two words hurt all the way to the bone. "I know," she said, bowing her head forward. He was right. How could they, she, risk everything again? Tears burned her eyes. There was no good answer. She couldn't lose Conlon again, but how could she say no to Lauren? "I love you so much, Con," she whispered. "And I love you." The way he said the words, they sounded like a curse. "This could be our chance," she said. "We've thought that before," he reminded her dully. "Do you know what it was like for me? Always picking you up, drying your tears, listening to you cry, worrying that it was somehow my fault." She touched his face. "You had tears of your own." "Yes." His voice was harsh. "I never dried them. How could I when I never saw you cry?" "Your pain was so big." "It's different this time, Con. We're different. We could be a team. Maybe she'll be able to go through with it, and we'll be the parents we always wanted to be. Or maybe she'll back out and it'll be just us. Either way, we'll be okay. I swear it." She dropped down to one knee, whispered, "Marry me, Conlon." He stared down at her, his eyes bright. "Damn you," he said, sinking slowly to his knees. "I don't want to live without you anymore." "Then don't, please." She kissed him. "Trust me, Conlon. This time, we'll last forever." Lauren heard David's car drive up. She ran to the front door and opened it, waiting for him. For the first time in months, he was smiling. "Are you ready for this?" he asked, taking her hand in his. "As ready as I'll ever be." They walked across the yard and got into his car. All the way to Mountain Air, he talked about the Porsche. Gear ratios and speed off the line and custom paint colors. She could tell how nervous he was, and strangely, his anxiety calmed her. When they reached his house, he parked the car, then let out a deep sigh and looked at her. "You're sure?"
"I am."
"Okay." They walked up the stone path to the Haynes' huge front door. David opened the door and led her into the cool beige elegance of his home. "Mom? Dad?
Are you sure they're home?"
Lauren whispered, taking his hand. "They're home. I told them we needed to talk." Mr. and Mrs. Haynes came into the room fast, as if they'd been waiting just around the corner. Mrs. Haynes stared at Lauren's rounded belly. Mr. Haynes studiously avoided looking at her. He led them into the sunken living room, where everything was the color of heavy cream and nothing was out of place. Unless, of course, you counted the pregnant girl. "Well," Mr. Haynes said, when they'd all sat down.
"How are you feeling?" Mrs. Haynes asked. Her voice sounded strained, and she seemed unable to meet Lauren's gaze.
"Fat, but great. My doctor says everything is perfect." "She got a full ride to USC," he said to his parents.
"That's fabulous," Mrs. Haynes said.
She glanced at her husband, who leaned forward in his seat. Lauren reached for David's hand, held it. She felt surprisingly calm. "We've decided to give the baby up for adoption."
"Thank God," Mr. Haynes said, sighing harshly.
For the first time, Lauren noticed the tenseness in his jawline, the worry in his eyes. Relief changed his face. He finally smiled. Mrs. Haynes moved to sit beside Lauren.
"That couldn't have been an easy decision for you."
Lauren was grateful for that.
"It wasn't."
Mrs. Haynes started to reach for her, then withdrew her hand at the last second. Lauren had the strange impression that David's mother was afraid to touch her.
"I think it's for the best. You two are so young. We'll call the lawyer and—"
"We've already chosen the parents,"
Lauren said. My boss, Angie Malone.
Mrs. Haynes nodded. Even though she was obviously relieved, she looked sad somehow.
She bent forward, picked up her purse, and pulled it onto her lap. She pulled out a checkbook, wrote a check and ripped it out, then stood up. She handed the check to Lauren. It was for $5,000.
Lauren looked up. I can't take this.
Mrs. Haynes gazed down at her. Lauren saw the wrinkles through her makeup for the first time.
It's for your college fund. Los Angeles is an expensive city. A scholarship won't handle everything, but
let me do this, she said softly.
You're a good girl, Lauren. On your way to becoming a good woman.
Lauren swallowed hard, surprised by how moved she was by that simple compliment.
Thank you.
Mrs. Haynes started to move away, then stopped and turned back.
Maybe you could give me a photograph of the baby, when he's born.
It was the first time Lauren had thought of the baby as their grandchild.
Sure, she said.
Mrs. Haynes looked down at her.
Do you really think you can do this?
I have to. It's the right thing to do. After that, there was nothing left to say. Chapter 29. It was almost midnight when Lauren got home. Closing the door behind her, she leaned against it, letting out a ragged sigh. She couldn't wait to climb into bed and close her eyes. This day had left her wounded. She touched her stomach, felt a flutter soft kick. Hey, she murmured to the baby as she headed for the living room. She was at the dining room table when she noticed the fire in the fireplace and the music coming through the speakers. It was something soft, Hawaiian sounding. Somewhere over the rainbow played on a ukulele. Angie and Conlon were sitting in front of the fire.
Oh, she said in surprise. I thought you were on a romantic getaway.
Angie rose, walked toward Lauren. When she got closer, she held out her left hand. A huge diamond glittered. We're getting married again.
Lauren squealed and threw herself into Angie's arms. That's great, she said, holding Angie tightly. She hadn't realized until just then how alone she'd felt all day, how much she'd missed Angie. She had trouble letting go.
Sorry, she said, finally drawing back.
She felt foolish. A girl who should be a woman. She said the first thing that popped into her mind, now my baby will have a daddy, too.
She'd said, my baby.
Actually, Lauren, that's what we came home to talk to you about.
It was Conlon who'd spoken. Lauren closed her eyes for just a moment as a wave of exhaustion moved through her. She didn't know if she could talk about the baby anymore, but she had no choice.
Okay.
Angie took her hand, squeezed it. The touch helped. Together, hand in hand, they went to the couch and sat down. Conlon remained sitting on the hearth. He was tilted forward, with his forearms rested on his thighs. Long black hair fell across part of his face. In the firelight, his eyes looked impossibly blue. She felt impaled by those eyes. She shifted uncomfortably on the sofa.
You're just a child, Conlon said, his voice surprisingly soft. So, I'm sorry about all this.
Lauren smiled. I quit being a kid a few months ago.
No, you had to face a grown-up thing. That's not the same thing as being a grown-up.
He sighed.
The thing is, Angie and I are scared.
Lauren hadn't expected that.
I thought you wanted a baby.
We do, Angie said in a tight voice.
Too much, maybe.
So you should be happy.
Lauren looked from Conlon to Angie. I'm giving you...
Oh, it came to her all at once.
The other girl. The one who changed her mind.
Yes.
I wouldn't do that to you guys. I promise. I mean, I love you. And I love my baby. Your baby. I want to do the right thing.
The emotions came rushing back. She felt as if she were drowning in them. Angie touched Lauren's face with a gentleness that made her cry.
We know that, Lauren.
We just want, need, Conlon interrupted, to know that you've thought about this, that you're sure. It will not be an easy thing to do.
Will it be harder than parenting at 17?
Angie's smile was as gentle as her touch had been.
That's an answer from your head. I asked a question of the heart.
None of this is easy, Lauren said, wiping her eyes. But I've thought and thought. This is the best answer. You can trust me.
A silence followed that statement. It was broken only by a log falling in the fireplace and a shower of hissing sparks.
We think you should see a counselor, Conlon said at last.
Why?
Angie was trying to smile, as if she wanted to show that this was nothing, just another late-night chat. The sadness in her eyes betrayed her.
Because I love you, Lauren, and as much as I'd love your baby to be mine, I know about where we're headed, where you're headed. It's one thing to decide to give up a baby. It's another thing to do it. I want you to be sure.
Lauren hardly heard anything after I love you. Only David had ever said those words to her before. She leaned forward and pulled Angie into a fierce hug.
I'd never hurt you, she whispered throatily. Never.
Angie drew back.
I know that.
So, you'll see the counselor, Conlon said, sounding more than a little afraid.
Of course.
Lauren found her first genuine smile of the day.
I'd do anything for you.
Angie hugged her again. In the distance, very softly, Lauren heard Conlon say,
Then don't break her heart.
The lawyer's office was crowded with people. On the left side of the room, their chairs pushed close together, were the Haynes family. On the right side, Angie sat in a chair beside Conlon. Lauren's chair was in the middle, and though there wasn't much space between her and the others, she seemed vaguely alone, separate. Angie got up to go to her. Just then the lawyer strode into the room. A tall, portly man in an expensive black suit, he commanded attention when he said,
Good day, all.
Angie sat back down.
I'm Stu Phillips, the lawyer said, extending his hand to Conlon, who stood instantly.
Conlon Malone, this is my... Angie Malone. Angie shook the lawyer's hand, then sat back down. She sat very still, trying not to remember the last time they'd been in a meeting like this.
I have a baby for you, Mr. and Mrs. Malone.
So, young lady, Stu said, looking gently at Lauren, you've made up your mind?
Yes, sir.
Her voice was barely audible.
Okay, then. First, let's begin with the technicalities. I need to advise you all that it is sometimes problematic to share representation in an adoption. It's legal in this state, but not always advisable. If something came up, a disagreement, I wouldn't be able to represent either party.
Nothing will come up, Lauren said. Her voice was stronger now. I've made up my mind.
Stu looked to Conlon.
Are you two prepared for the risks of dual representation?
That's the least of our risk here, Stu, Conlon answered.
Stu pulled some paperwork from a manila folder and slid them across the desk. Sign these documents and we'll proceed. They merely state that you knowingly accept the risks inherent in dual representation.
When the documents were signed, he put them away. For the next hour, he talked about the process. Who could pay for what needed to be signed and by whom, the ins and outs of Washington law, the home study that would need to be done, the termination of the birth parent's rights, the guardian ad litems that would be assigned, the time and expense of all of it.
Angie had heard it all before. And she knew that in the end, the technicalities didn't add up to squat. It was emotions that mattered. Feelings. You could sign all the papers in the world and make a delivery truck full of promises, but you couldn't know how it would feel when you got there. That was why the adoption couldn't be legally finalized before the birth. Lauren would have to hold her baby and then sign her rights away. Angie's heart ached at the very thought of it. She glanced to her left.
Lauren sat very quietly in the chair, with her hands clasped in her lap. Even with her rounded stomach, she looked young and innocent. The girl who'd swallowed a watermelon. She was nodding earnestly at something the lawyer asked her. Angie wanted to go to her, kneel down beside her and hold her hand, say you're not alone in this. But the sad truth was that soon, Lauren would be alone. What could be more solitary than giving your baby away? And nothing Angie could do could protect Lauren from that moment. Angie closed her eyes. How could they get through all of this with their hearts intact? How? She felt a tug on her sleeve. She blinked, glanced sideways. Conlon was staring at her. So was the attorney, Lauren, and everyone in the room. Did you ask me something? She said, feeling her cheeks heat up. As I was saying, Stu said, I like to make an adoption plan. It makes everything go much smoother. Shall we begin? Certainly, Angie said. Stu looked from Angie to Lauren. What kind of communication do you want to have after the adoption? Lauren frowned. What do you mean? After the Malones adopt your child, you'll want some kind of communication, I imagine. Phone calls on the baby's birthday and perhaps Christmas. Letters and photographs at least once a year. Lauren drew in a sharp breath. It sounded like a tiny gasp. She obviously hadn't thought this far ahead, hadn't realized that this adoption would change who they all were. She turned to look at Angie, who felt as fragile suddenly as a winter leaf. We'll be in touch all the time, Angie said to the attorney, hearing the catch in her voice. Lauren is like family. I'm not sure that kind of openness is in the best interest of the child, the lawyer said. Clearly delineated boundaries are most effective. We find that... Oh, Lauren said, biting down on her lip. She wasn't listening to the lawyer. She was looking at Conlon and Angie. I hadn't thought about that. A baby only needs one mother around. David leaned over and took Lauren's hand in his. We don't have to have an adoption like everyone else's, Angie said. She would have said more, but her voice softened, cracked, and she couldn't think of anything. She couldn't imagine letting Lauren just walk out of their lives. But what other end was there to all of this? Lauren looked at her. The sadness in the girl's dark eyes was almost unbearable. For once she looked old, ancient, even. I didn't realize. I should have. She tried to smile. You're going to be the perfect mom, Angie. My baby is lucky. Our baby, David said softly. Lauren gave him a heartbreakingly sad smile. Angie sat there a moment longer, unsure of what to say. Finally, Lauren looked at the lawyer again. Tell me how it works best. The meeting went on and on. Words were batted back and forth and committed to paper, black marks that delineated how each of them could behave. All the while, Angie wanted to go to Lauren and take the girl in her arms and whisper that it would be all right. But now, sitting here in this room of laws and rules, surrounded by hearts that didn't quite know what to feel, she wondered, would it be all right? For the first time in anyone's memory, it didn't rain on Easter Sunday. Instead, the sun rose high in a clear blue sky. The sidewalks were full of people, most of them dressed in their Sunday best as they walked in all different directions to their churches. Angie walked between Conlon and Lauren. Up ahead, the church bells started to peal. Her friends and family started toward the church, funneling inside. Just outside the doors, Angie paused. Conlon and Lauren had no choice but to pause, too. We'll tell them everything later. At the Easter egg hunt, right? They both nodded. Angie felt for her wedding ring, twisted it around to hide the diamond. Such a trick wouldn't fool the Desaria women for long, but hopefully they'd be too busy with the mass to notice. She took a step forward. Lauren stopped her with a touch. What is it, honey? There was a look in Lauren's eyes that Angie couldn't read. There's nothing to be nervous about. Here, take my hand. As she said it, Lauren's eyes filled with tears. Thanks, Lauren said, looking away quickly. Hand in hand, they walked up the concrete steps into the beautiful old church. The service seemed to take forever and still not last long enough. Angie concentrated on helping Lauren rise and kneel and rise again. When Angie got her chance to pray, she knelt on the padded riser, bowed her head, and thought, "Dear God, please show us the right way through all of this. Keep us safe. Protect and watch over Lauren. In this I pray. Amen." After services were over, they all went downstairs to the basement of the church, where dozens of cakes and cookies were set out on the tables. Angie kept her left hand in her pocket as she talked to family and friends. Finally, the kids streamed into the hall, all talking at once, carrying the egg carton macaroni jewelry boxes they'd made. The congregation began moving to the doors. They walked out into the cold, bright morning, a crowd of well-dressed people with something in common. They crossed the street and went into the park. Angie stared at the empty merry-go-round. Sunlight made it glisten like sterling silver. Conlon came up beside her, slipped an arm around her waist. She knew he was thinking of Sophie, too. How many times had they stood here together, watching other children play and dreaming of their own, saying quietly to one another, "Someday." Kids jumped onto the merry-go-round, set it spinning. "Okay, kids," said Father O'Houlihan in his lilting Irish brogue. "There are eggs hidden all around here. Go!" The kids shrieked and set off in search of the hidden eggs. Lauren went to little Danny, who stood close to Mira. "Come on," Lauren said, attempting to kneel and giving up. "I'll help you look." She took Danny's hand, and off they went. Within moments, the whole Desaria clan was standing together. They were like geese, Angie thought. Somehow they just floated into formation. Their conversations sounded vaguely bird-like, too, with so many voices going at once. Angie cleared her throat. Conlon squeezed her hand, threw her a go-for-it smile. "I have two things to say," she said. When no one listened, she said it louder. Mama was the first to respond. She whopped Uncle Francis in the back of the head. "Our Angela has something to say." "Someday, Maria, I'm going to hit you back," Uncle Francis said, rubbing the back of his head. Mira and Livy moved in closer. Angie showed off her ring. The screams probably shattered windows all through the town. The family surged forward like a wave, crashing around Angie and Conlon. Everyone was talking at once, congratulating them and asking questions and saying they knew it all along. When the wave receded and they were all on the shore again, it was Mama who remembered. "What is the second thing?" she asked. "What?" Angie said, edging toward Conlon. "You said you had two things to tell us. What is next? You're quitting the restaurant?" "No, actually, we think, we're going to stay in West End this time. Conlon has a contract to write a book, and he's been given a weekly column for the newspaper. He can work from here." "That's great news," Mama said. Livy moved closer. "So what gives, baby sis?" Angie reached back for Conlon's hand. She held on to him. Let him be her port. "We're going to adopt Lauren's baby." This time the silence could have broken glass. Angie felt it clear to her bones. "This is not a good idea," Mama said at last. Angie clung to Conlon's hand. "What am I supposed to do? Say no? Watch her give the baby to strangers?" As one, the family turned, looked at Lauren. The teenager was by the swing set, down on her hands and knees, searching through the tall grass. Little Danny was beside her, giggling and pointing. From this distance, they looked like any young mother and her daughter. "Lauren has a big heart," Mama said, "and a sad past. It is a dangerous combination, Angela." Livy stepped forward. "Can you handle it?" she asked gently, the only question that really mattered. "If she changes her mind?" Angie looked up at Conlon, who smiled down at her and nodded. Together, that look said, "We can handle anything." "Yes," she said, finding a pretty decent smile. "I can handle it." "The hardest part will be saying goodbye to Lauren."
"But you'll have a baby," Mira said.
"Maybe," Mama said. "The other time, this is not up for a vote. Conlon said, and that shut them up. They all looked at Lauren again. Then, one by one, they started talking about other, more ordinary things. Angie released her breath. The storm had been faced and survived. Oh, there would be gossip through the family, burning up the phone lines as each of them dissected this news and formed an opinion. Those opinions would be tossed back and forth on a daily basis. Some of it would filter down to Angie. Most of it would not. It didn't matter. There was nothing they could come up with that Angie hadn't worried about and foreseen. Some things in life, though, couldn't be gone in search of. They simply had to be waited for. Like the weather. You could look on the horizon and see a bank of black storm clouds. That didn't guarantee rain tomorrow. It might just as easily dawn bright and clear. There was no damn way to tell. All you could do was keep moving and live your life. Cars had been arriving steadily for the last hour. Every few minutes or so, the front door cracked open and new guests streamed into the house, carrying boxes of food and presents wrapped in pretty paper. There were men in the living room, watching sports on the aged television and drinking beer. At least a dozen children were clustered in the den. Some were playing board games, others had Barbies dancing with Kens, and still others played Nintendo. But the heart of the action took place in the kitchen. Mira and Livy were busy making the antipasto trays. Provolone, roasted peppers, tuna fish, olives, bruschetta. Maria was layering homemade manicotti in porcelain baking dishes, and Angie was trying to make ricotta cream for the cannoli. In the corner, on the small kitchen table that had somehow once held the entire D'Saria family for casual meals, a three-tiered white wedding cake rose above a sea of napkins and silverware.
"Lauren," Maria said, "start setting up the buffet in the dining room."
Lauren immediately went to the little table and started picking things up, silverware and cocktail napkins first. She carried them into the dining room and stood there, staring at the huge table. A pale green damask tablecloth covered it. A vase full of white roses was the centerpiece. There would be photographs taken of this table. She needed to do it right. But how? "The silverware goes here, at the beginning," Angie said, coming up beside her. "Like this." Lauren watched Angie arrange the silverware into a pretty pattern, and it struck her all at once, so hard that Lauren drew in a sharp breath. "I'll be leaving soon." "Are you okay, honey? You look like you've just lost your best friend." Lauren forced a smile and said quickly, "I don't think you should be setting the table at your own wedding. That's the great thing about remarrying the same guy. What matters is the marriage, not the ceremony. We're only doing this for Mama." She leaned closer. "I told her not to bother, but you know my mother." Angie went back to setting out the silverware. Lauren felt her move slightly to the left, and it seemed suddenly as if there was a vast space between them. "Do you want a boy or a girl?" Angie's hand froze in midair. A pair of knives hung suspended above the table. The moment seemed to draw out. From the other rooms, noise surrounded them, but here in the dining room, there was only the sound of two women breathing slowly. "I don't know," she said at last, then went back to placing silverware. "Healthy is all that matters." "That counselor you sent me to? She said I should feel free to ask you questions. She said it's better to have everything out in the open."
"You can talk to me about anything, you know that."
"That adoption plan we made." Lauren started to ask the question that had kept her up all last night. Halfway into it, she lost her nerve. Angie turned to her.
"Yes?"
Lauren swallowed hard. "Will you stick to it? Send me letters and pictures?"
"Oh, honey, of course we will."
Lauren couldn't hold it inside anymore. She felt as if she were breaking apart. "You'll forget me." Angie's face crumpled at that. Tears glistened in her eyes as she pulled Lauren into her arms and said fiercely, "Never." Lauren was the first to draw away. Instead of comforting her, the hug had only made her feel more alone. She put a hand on her belly, felt her baby's fluttery movements. She was just about to ask Angie to touch her stomach when David walked into the living room. She ran for him, let him take her in his arms. The loneliness that had gripped her only a moment ago released its hold. She wouldn't be alone after the baby. She'd have David.
"You look great," he said. It made her smile, even if it was a lie. "I'm as big as a house," he laughed. "I like houses."
Smart ass. He looped an arm around her and headed for the food. On the way there, he told her all the gossip from school. She was laughing again by the time the music started, and Maria herded everyone to the backyard, where a rented white arbor was entwined with hundreds of pink silk roses. Conlon stood beneath the arbor, wearing a pair of black Levi's and a black crew-necked sweater. Father O'Houlihan was beside him, dressed in full robes. To the strains of Nat King Cole's Unforgettable, Angie walked down the flagstone path. She wore a white cashmere cable-knit sweater and a gauzy white skirt. Her feet were bare, and the wind whipped her long, dark hair across her back. A single white rose was her bouquet. Lauren stared at her in awe. As Angie passed Lauren, she smiled. Their gazes met, held for the briefest moment, and Lauren thought, "I love you, too." It was crazy. Angie handed Lauren the rose and kept walking. Lauren stared down at the rose in disbelief. Even now, in this moment that was Angie's, she'd thought of Lauren. "You see how lucky you are," she whispered to her baby, touching her swollen belly. "That's going to be your mom." She wasn't sure why it made her want to cry. Chapter 30. On a rainy Monday in late April, Maria decided that Angie needed to learn how to cook. She showed up early, carrying a big cardboard box full of supplies. No amount of arguing could change her mind. "You are a married woman, again. You should cook." Lauren stood in the doorway, trying not to laugh at Angie's protests. "What are you laughing about?" Maria demanded, putting her hands on her hips. "You are learning, too. Both of you get dressed and be back in this kitchen in 10 minutes. Lauren ran upstairs, changed out of her flannel nightgown and into a pair of black leggings and an old Faircrest Bulldogs t-shirt. When she skidded back into the kitchen, Maria looked up at her. Lauren stood there, smiling uncertainly. "What should I do?" Maria walked over to her. Shaking her head, she made a small tisking sound. "You are too young to have such sad eyes," she said quietly. Lauren didn't know what to say to that. Maria grabbed an apron out of the box and handed it to Lauren. "Here, put this on." Lauren did as she was told. "Now, come here." Maria led the way to the counter and began pulling ingredients out of the box. By the time Angie made it back to the kitchen, dressed in jeans and a t-shirt, there was a mound of flour on the butcher's block and a metal bowl full of eggs alongside it. "Pasta," Angie said, frowning. For the next hour, they worked side by side. Maria taught them how to scoop out the center of the flour and fill the hole with just the right amount of eggs, then to work the dough carefully so it didn't get tough. While Lauren was learning to roll the dough into sheets, Angie went into the living room and turned on the music. "That's better," she said, dancing back into the room. Maria handed Lauren a metal sunburst with a handle. "Now, cut that pasta into strips, maybe 2 inches square." Lauren frowned. "I might screw up. Maybe Angie should try." Angie laughed at that. "Yeah, I'm certainly the better choice." Maria smiled at Lauren, touched her face gently. "You know what happens if you make a mistake?"
"What?"
"We roll it out and try again. Cut!" Lauren picked up the scalloped pastry wheel and began cutting the pasta into squares. No chemistry lab had ever been undertaken with more care. "You see this, Angie?" Maria said. "Your girl has the gift."
Your girl. For the rest of the morning, those two words stayed with Lauren, warmed her. As they made the tortellini filling and finished the pasta, she found herself smiling, laughing sometimes, for no reason. She hated to see the cooking lesson come to an end.
"Well," Maria said at last, "I must go now. My garden is calling to me. I have planting to do." Angie laughed. "Thank God." She tossed a wink at Lauren. "I think I'll stick with sneaking home from the restaurant with leftovers."
"Someday you will be sorry, Angela,"
Maria sniffed, that you ignored your heritage.
Angie put an arm around her mother, held her close. I'm just kidding, Mama. I appreciate the lesson. Tomorrow, I'll get out a cookbook and try something on my own. How would that be?
Good!
Maria hugged them both, said goodbye, and left the house. Lauren went to the sink and started washing the dishes. Angie sidled up beside her. They washed and dried in the easy rhythm they'd created recently. When the dishes were dried and put away, Angie said, I need to run down to help your neighbor house. I have a meeting with the director. The coat drive went so well, we're trying to come up with another promotion.
Oh.
Lauren stood there, drying her wet hands, as Angie hurried through the house and then left. The door slammed shut. In the yard, a car started up. Lauren went to the window and stared out, watching Angie drive away. Behind her, the CD changed. Bruce Springsteen's gravelly voice started up. Baby, we were born to run. She spun away from the window and ran for the stereo, clicking the music off hard. A sharp silence descended. It was so quiet that she thought she could hear the tapping of Conlon's fingers on the laptop upstairs, but that was impossible. She tried not to think about her mother, but now that was impossible, too.
I thought kids your age love the boss, Conlon said from behind her.
She turned around slowly. Hey, she said. In the weeks since the wedding, Lauren had tried to keep her distance from Conlon. They lived in the same house, of course, so it wasn't easy. But she sensed a hesitation in him, an unwillingness to get to know her. She kept her back to the window and stared at him, twisting her hands together nervously. Angie went to town. She'll be back in a while.
I know.
Of course, she would have told her husband. Lauren felt like an idiot for having said anything. Conlon crossed the room, came up closer.
You're nervous around me.
You're nervous around me.
He smiled. Touché. I'm just worried, that's all.
Angie is fragile sometimes. She leads with her heart.
And you think I'll hurt her?
Not purposely, no. Lauren had no answer to that, so she changed the subject.
Do you want to be a father?
Something passed through his eyes then, a sadness, maybe, that made her wish she hadn't asked the question.
Yes.
They stared at each other. She saw the way he was trying to smile, and it wounded her, made her feel closer to him. She knew about disappointment.
I'm not like that other girl, you know.
I know. He backed up, as if he wanted to put some distance between them, and sat down on the sofa.
Do you?
Yes. She went to the coffee table and sat down on it.
What kind of father would you be?
The question seemed to jolt him. He flinched, looked down at his hands. It took him a long time to answer, and when he finally did, his voice was soft.
There, I guess. I wouldn't miss a thing. Not a game. Not a school play, not a dentist appointment.
He looked up. I'd take her, or him, to the park and the beach and the movies. Lauren's breath caught in her throat. Longing tightened her chest. She hadn't realized until just then, with that quietly spoken answer, that what she'd really been asking was, what does a father do? He looked at her, and in his eyes she saw that sadness again. And a new understanding. She felt transparent suddenly, vulnerable. She stood up.
I guess I'll go read. I just started the new Stephen King book.
We could go to the movies, he said gently. To Have and Have Not is playing downtown. She barely had a voice.
I've never heard of it.
He stood up beside her. Bogart and Bacall? The greatest screen pair of all time? That's criminal. Come on, let's go. May roared across western Washington. Day after day dawned bright and hot. All over town, roses burst into fragrant bloom. Overnight, it seemed, the baskets that hung along Driftwood Way went from spindly, gray, and unnoticeable to riotous cascades of color. Purple lobelia, red gardenia, yellow pansies, and lavender phlox. The air smelled of fresh flowers and salt water and kelp baking beneath a hot sun. To locals, this was the golden month, where the sun shone on the still isolated beaches and the town saw only familiar faces on the streets. They came out of their homes slowly, blinking mole-like at the brightness. Kids ripped open their closets and burrowed through everything, looking for last year's cutoffs and shirts without sleeves or fleece lining. Later, their mothers stood in those same bedrooms, hands on hips, staring at the piles of winter clothes, hearing the whirl of bike wheels outside and the laughter of children who'd been hiding from the rain for too many months. Soon, after Memorial Day, the town would begin to fill up with tourists. They would arrive in hordes, by car, by bus, by recreational vehicles, carrying their fishing gear, reading tide charts. The empty stretch of sandy beach would call out to them inexorably, drawing them to the sea in words so old and elemental they could no longer say what had brought them here. But come they would. To those who had lived in West End always, or to those who had survived a few wet winters, the tourists were good news, bad news. No one doubted that their money kept this town going, fixed the roads and bought the school supplies and paid the teachers. They also caused traffic and crowds and lines 10 people long at the grocery checkout. On the first Saturday in May, Lauren woke up early, unable to find a comfortable position in which to sleep. She slipped into clothes, a pair of elephant-waisted stretch leggings, and a gauzy tent blouse with bell-shaped sleeves, then looked out her bedroom window. The sky was a beautiful lavender pink that seemed to backlight the black trees. She decided to go outside. She felt closeted in here, too confined. She crept past Angie and Conlon's closed door. She crept downstairs, grabbed the soft Angora blanket off the sofa, and went outside. The gentle, lapping sound of the surf was an instant balm to her ragged nerves. She felt herself calming down, breathing evenly again. She stood at the porch railing for all of 10 minutes before her feet started hurting. This pregnancy was really starting to suck. Her feet hurt, her heart burned, her head ached half the time, and her baby was starting to hurl through her stomach like a gymnast. The worst part of it all was the Lamaze classes that she and Angie attended every week. The pictures were terrifying. Poor David had gone to one class and begged to be let go. In truth, she'd been glad to let him. She wanted Angie beside her when the time came. Lauren was pretty sure that breathing hard in a ha-ha-ha pattern wouldn't get her through the pain. She'd need Angie. Last night, she'd had the dream again. The one in which she was a little girl dressed in a red JCPenney's dress and holding her mother's hand. She felt so safe with that strong hand wrapped around her tiny fingers. "Come on now," her dream mother said. "We don't want to be late." What they were going to be late for, Lauren didn't know. Sometimes it was church, sometimes it was school, sometimes it was a dinner with Daddy. All she knew was that she would have followed that mommy anywhere. Last night, in her dream, the woman holding her hand had been Angie. Lauren sat down in the big old oak rocker on the porch. The curved seat seemed made for her. She sighed in comfort. She'd have to tell Angie that this would be a great place to rock the baby to sleep at night. That way she, Lauren always thought of the baby as a girl, would grow up listening to the sea. Lauren believed that would have made a difference in her life, being rocked to sleep, listening to the surf, instead of neighbors fighting and cigarettes being lit. "You'd like that, wouldn't you?" she said to her unborn baby, who kicked in response. She leaned back in the chair and closed her eyes. The gentle rocking motion was so soothing. Already today she needed that. This was going to be a difficult day, one in which her whole life seemed to be trapped in a tiny rearview mirror. On this day last year, she'd gone to the beach with her friends. The guys had played football and hacky sack while the girls soaked up the sun, wearing tiny bikinis and sunglasses. When night fell, they built a bonfire and roasted hot dogs and marshmallows and listened to music. She'd felt so safe in David's arms that night, so certain of her place beside him in the world.
She'd only just begun to worry that they'd go to different colleges. In 1 year, she'd gone from child to woman. She hoped there was a way to go back again. When she gave her baby to Angie and Conlon, Lauren would... She couldn't quite finish that thought. It happened that way more and more often lately, this onset of panic. It wasn't the adoption. Lauren had no doubt that she'd made the right choice, and no doubt that she'd follow through with it. The problem came after that. She was a smart girl. She'd grilled the adoption counselor and the guardian ad litem they'd appointed for her. She'd asked every question that popped into her mind. She'd even gone to the library and read about open adoptions. They were better than the old closed adoptions, from her perspective anyway, because she could still hear about her child's growth. Pictures, artwork, letters, even the occasional visit were all the norm in these new adoptions. But the one thing all adoptions had in common, finally, at the end of the day, was this. The birth mother went on with her life. Alone. This was the future that haunted Lauren. She'd found a home here with Angie and Conlon, a family in the Desarias. The thought of losing that, of being alone in the world again, was almost more than she could bear. But sooner or later, she would be alone again. David would go off to college. Her mother was gone. And Angie and Conlon would hardly want Lauren hanging around once they'd adopted the baby. Some things in life had a natural order that was obvious to everyone. Goodbye, birth mother, was one of those things. She sighed deeply, stroking her distended stomach. What mattered was her baby's happiness and Angie's. That was what she needed to remember. Behind her, the screen door screeched open and banged shut. "You're up early," Angie said, coming up beside her, placing a warm hand on Lauren's shoulder. "Have you ever tried to sleep on top of a watermelon? That's what it's like." Angie sat down on the slatted porch swing. The metal chains clanked and squeaked at her weight. Lauren remembered a moment too late that Angie knew how that felt. Silence fell between them, broken only by the sound of the waves below. It would have been easy, familiar, to close her eyes and lean back and pretend everything was okay. That's what she'd been doing for the past month. They all focused on the now, because the future was frightening. But their time for pretense was running out. "My due date is only a few weeks away," she said, as if Angie didn't know that. "The books say you're supposed to be nesting. Maybe we should have a baby shower." Angie sighed. "I've nested plenty, Lauren, and I've got lots of baby things." "You're afraid, aren't you? You think something will be wrong with the baby, like Sophie." "Oh, no," Angie said quickly. "Sophie was born too early, that's all. I'm sure your baby is strong and healthy."
"You mean your baby," Lauren said.
"We should turn my room into the nursery. I've seen all those boxes in the laundry room. How come you haven't unpacked them?"
"There's time.
I could start..."
"No."
Angie seemed to realize how sharply she'd spoken. It was practically a yell. She smiled weakly.
"I can't think about decorating yet. It's too early."
Lauren saw the fear in Angie's eyes, and suddenly it all clicked into place. "The other girl. She decorated the nursery with you."
"Sarah," Angie said,
her voice almost lost in the sounds of early summer, the surf, the shore breezes, the birdsong. A pair of wind chimes clanged together, sounding like church bells. It hurt to see Angie so afraid. Lauren went to her, sat down on the swing beside her.
"I'm not Sarah. I wouldn't hurt you like that."
"I know that, Lauren."
"So don't be afraid."
Angie laughed.
"Okay.
Then I'll cure cancer and walk on water." She sobered.
"It's not about you, Lauren. Some fears run deep, that's all. It's nothing for you to worry about. For now, that's your bedroom. I like having you there."
"One occupant at a time, is that it?"
Something like that. Now, don't you have something to tell me?
What?
Like that today is your 18th birthday? I had to find out from David.
Oh,
that. It hadn't occurred to her to tell them. Her birthdays had always come and gone without much fanfare. We're having a party at Mama's.
A feeling moved through Lauren. It felt as if she'd just drunk a huge amount of champagne.
For me?
Angie laughed.
Of course it's for you. Though I warn you now, there will probably be games.
Lauren couldn't contain her smile. No one had ever thrown her a birthday party before.
I love games.
Angie produced a small, foil-wrapped package and handed it to her.
Here, she said. I wanted to give this to you when things were quiet, just us.
Lauren's fingers were trembling with excitement as she opened the gift. Inside a white box marked Seaside Jewelry was a beautiful silver necklace with a heart-shaped locket. When Lauren opened the locket, she found a tiny photograph of her and Angie. The left side was blank. For the baby.
Lauren wasn't sure why it made her want to cry. She only knew that when she hugged Angie and whispered, "Oh, thank you," she tasted the salty moisture of her own tears. Finally, she drew back, wiping her eyes. It was embarrassing to cry so easily and over a necklace. She went to the porch rail and looked out over the ocean. Surprisingly, it was hard to talk past the lump in her throat.
"I love it here," she said softly, leaning forward into the breeze. Finally, she turned around. "The baby will love growing up here. I wish..."
"What do you wish?"
Slowly, Lauren turned around. "If I'd grown up in a place like this, with a mother like you, I don't know. Maybe I wouldn't be shopping for clothes that could double as parachutes."
"Everyone makes mistakes, honey. Growing up loved doesn't shield you from that."
"You don't know what it's like," Lauren said, "not being loved, to want so much from someone."
Angie got to her feet and went to Lauren. "I'm sure your mother loves you, Lauren. She's just confused right now.
The weird thing is, I miss her sometimes. I wake up crying and realize I was dreaming about her. Do you think those dreams will go away?"
Angie touched Lauren's cheek gently. "I think a girl needs her mother forever. But maybe it will stop hurting so much. And maybe someday she'll come back."
"Needing something from my mother is like waiting to win the lottery. You can buy a ticket every week and pray, but the odds aren't good."
"I'm here for you," Angie said. "And I love you."
Lauren felt the sting of tears. "I love you, too." She threw her arms around Angie and clung to her. She wished she never had to let go. With each passing day, Angie felt herself tightening. One twist of the spine at a time, until by early June she had a constant headache and it hurt to get out of bed. Conlon kept telling her that she needed to see a chiropractor. She'd nod and say, "You know, you're right." And sometimes she even went so far as to make an appointment. But she knew the source of her problem didn't reside in her bones. It was a heart thing. Every sunrise brought her closer to the baby she'd always wanted, and closer to the day Lauren would leave. The truth was, it was chewing Angie up inside. Those two needs of hers couldn't coexist. Conlon knew this, of course. His recommendation of a chiropractor was purely out of form, a man's need to find solutions. When they lay in bed at night, as fitted together as long-lost puzzle pieces, he asked the questions that mattered. She answered each one, no matter how it hurt.
"She'll be leaving soon," he said tonight, drawing Angie closer, stroking her upper arm with his thumb. "She wants to go to Los Angeles early to find a job. The counselor thinks arrangements can be made for her to house-sit a sorority for the summer."
"Yeah."
It's the way it has to be, Conlan said. Angie closed her eyes, but it didn't help. The images were carved into her mind. Lauren packing up, kissing them goodbye, moving out.
I know, she said. I just hate to think of her being all alone.
Conlan's voice was gentle when he said, I think she'll need to get away. She doesn't know how hard it's going to be. I've tried to tell her. She's 18 years old. We're lucky she listens to us about anything. He tightened his hold. There's no way you can prepare her for this. There's a chance. Angie marshaled her strength to finish. She won't be able to do it. Are you ready for that? Last time, this isn't last time. With Sarah, I thought about the baby all the time. I used to go sit in the nursery and imagine how it would be. I'd call her Boo, she'd call me Mommy. I dreamed every night about rocking her to sleep, holding her in my arms. And now? She looked at him. Now I dream about Lauren. I see us at her college graduation, her wedding. Then I see us waving goodbye, and she's always crying. But you're the one who wakes up with wet cheeks.
I don't know if I can take her baby from her, Angie said, finally daring to voice her deepest fear. And I don't know how I could possibly refuse. All I know is either way, our hearts get sliced open.
You're stronger now. We are. He leaned over to kiss her.
Am I?
She said as soon as he drew back. Then why am I afraid to get Papa's cradle from the boxes? Conlan sighed, and for a moment she saw the fear in his blue eyes. She wasn't sure if it belonged to him or if it were a reflection of hers. The Field of Dreams bed, he said quietly, as if he'd just remembered it. Her father had built it by hand, polishing each bit of wood to a satin finish. He'd said he got the idea from the Kevin Costner movie. There had been tears in Papa's eyes when he presented the cradle to his Angelina. I built it, he said. Now she will come. Just hold on to me, Conlan said at last. I'll keep us steady no matter what.
Yeah, she answered. But who will hold on to Lauren?
It rained on the second Saturday in June. All the prayers for sunshine had been ignored. Lauren couldn't have cared less about the weather. It was the mirror image that depressed her. She stared at herself. The good news was her hair. Always her best feature anyway, pregnancy had given her coppery hair a new shine. The bad news was everything else. Her face had begun in the last week to gain weight, and her always apple-round cheeks were edging toward plate size. And forget about her stomach. Behind her, a pile of clothes covered her carefully made bed. In the past hour, she tried on every conceivable maternity wear combination. No matter what she wore, she looked like a soccer mom blow-up doll. There was a knock at the door. Angie's voice said, Come on, Lauren, it's time to go. I'll be right down. Lauren sighed. This was it. She went to the mirror and checked her makeup for the fourth time, fighting the nervous urge to layer more color on her face. Instead, she grabbed her purse, slung it over her shoulder, and left the bedroom. Downstairs, Angie and Conlan were waiting for her. They looked absurdly gorgeous, both of them. Conlan, dressed in a black suit with a steel-blue shirt, looked like the new James Bond, and Angie, in a rose-colored wool dress, was every bit his match. "Are you sure about this?" Angie asked.
"I'm fine," Lauren said. "Let's go."
The drive to Fircrest Academy seemed to take half its usual time. Before Lauren was quite ready, they were there, parking in the school lot. In an awkward silence, the three of them walked across campus. All around them, people were laughing and talking and snapping photographs. The auditorium was a hive of activity. At the door,
She paused. She couldn't go in there. Couldn't lumber up those bleachers and sit down with all the parents and grandparents.
You can do it, Conlin said, taking her arm.
His touch steadied her. She looked up at the crowd, then at the decorations strung across the walls. Class of 2004. Boldly into the future.